Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is May 27th, 2014, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Take the Hashtag and Leave the Classroom. So you've guessed it, I have got a phenomenal guest skeptic, the man, the myth, the legend, Dr. Joe Lex. And I'm introducing him like that is because many consider Dr. Joe Lex the godfather of free open access to medical education and the movement that it's become. Dr. Lex is a professor of emergency medicine at Temple University, and his site is called Free Emergency Medicine Talks, which has over 2,300 MP3s of lectures from around the world. It is an unbelievable global and free resource for anyone interested in emergency medicine. Dr. Lex has inspired the next generation of emergency physicians, and it is an honor to have you on the show. Welcome to the SGEM.
Thank you. That was way too long an introduction.
In fact, I abbreviated that.
Well, thank you.
Now, some of the listeners who may not be familiar with your famous foam quote, I want to know the backstory. How did that happen?
I wish I could remember exactly. It actually developed out of a conversation that took place on the Critical Care Listserv a few years ago, the CCML Listserv. And I don't remember exactly who said it, but I sort of took it and condensed it and made it my own. I try not to take credit for the full quote. I'll take credit for the revised quote. But it really was somebody else who said, if you want to know how we practiced medicine 5 years ago, read a textbook. If you want to know how we practiced 2 years ago, read a journal article. If you want to know how we practice now, go to a good meeting. And then the rest of it was sort of mine. And that is, if you want to know how we're going to practice in the future, listen to the conversations in the hallway and use foam. And this was after the foam had been first described by Mike Cadogan. I was in Dublin at ISIM 2012 and ran into Mike the morning after he came up with that term over the glass of Guinness. I wish I could claim I was at the table. I wasn't. But I was there the next morning when he was so excited about the topic, and we exchanged ideas about what foam ED could be.
Well, I love these stories because, you know, it's like evidence-based medicine. It has layers, and it's complicated, and it all depends. And it's not just black and white and clear cut. So let's talk about this pro-con debate that came up in EP Monthly. That's how this came to my attention. And I did a podcast recently on foam and why it was essential for medical education. And in this pro-con debate, you, of course, were approached by the editor and asked if you felt foam was an essential tool for medical education. And your response was?
My response, are you kidding me? Of course it's an essential tool. And I think it's especially essential for emergency physicians and critical care specialists.
Now, that wasn't the response from Dr. Nick Jeans. He had some concerns with free open access to medical education. And I'm going to ask you to briefly comment on each one of his concerns, if that's okay.
Sure. Absolutely.
So, and I condense these into five because five is my favorite number and I can count to it on one hand. Really, there was six, but if there's six, I can always cut it down and combine two into one. So,
now, Corey Slovis would be proud of you. He does everything. There are five reasons for everything.
Absolutely. So, the first concern that Nick expressed was that students and doctors would end up overdosing on foam.
I don't know what he means by that. I'm going to say that I think that foam is an essential tool for medical education, but maybe not for medical students. Medical students have to grasp the basics. Now, we're doing a lousy job of teaching the basics. I think where foam is most useful in education is in the people who already have the background basics.
So you're starting with a fundamental knowledge base, and then you're building, adding, and augmenting that with the foam material.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Medical students are not prepared to to discriminate what is essential, what is useless, what is good, what is bad. They're still in that absorbent sponge stage. Residents are a little better, at a little better place. They're still not at a point where foam can be the be-all and end-all. I think it is helpful. I think it's supplemental when you have podcasts out there like Boring EM or EM Basic that actually do cover some of the basics of emergency medicine. And if you listen to some of the basic talks that are on my website, Free Emergency Talks, that will help. But it's not where you're going to get all of your education. It's probably the same for people who've even been in practice for many years. It's good to have the foam material, but I couldn't live if I didn't have my monthly emergency medical abstracts, if I didn't have Rick and Jerry doing the distilling of articles for me.
So let's get on to then the second concern that Nick raised, and that was he was concerned about the quality and difficulty of referencing foam material.
I suppose his big concern is, are you familiar with the Dr. Fox effect? You ever heard of the Dr. Fox lecture?
I am not.
No, okay. Many years ago, someone did an experiment by hiring an actor to give a talk on number theory. And it was total nonsense, but the actor was incredibly entertaining and incredibly enjoyable to be in the room with, and he got stellar evaluations for spouting pure nonsense. This is always cited as one of the problems with education is, I'm not saying it's easy to be an entertaining speaker, but it's easier to be an entertaining speaker that spouts nonsense than it is to be an entertaining speaker who actually educates. Nick's problem about quality may be related to that. In reality, I think most people know BS when they hear it, or most people know a bad speaker or a bad teacher rather quickly, and they're just not going to go back to that particular person. Should they not find the podcast or the blog what they want. Now, difficulty referencing, does he mean difficulty knowing what references were used to develop that, or does he mean when we speak about that, how do we reference it? I'm not sure what he means by that. Do you?
I think what Nick meant with referencing was people could refer to a podcast, but then how could they actually find that information at that point in time in the podcast? Whereas with an indexed journal, you could do a PubMed search and then actually try to find that specific information.
Yeah. I think that's a trivial matter. I don't think that's a major thing at all.
Well, then let's move on to question three, if that's trivial.
Sure.
He was concerned that foam is not a curriculum in and of itself.
Oh, boy, the way it's set up online right now, it's not, but people are working on that.
And that's what I said to Nick. I said, you know, lots of curriculum took time to develop, and this too will be developed into a curriculum, and it'll be a tool that could be used just like any other educational tool.
Yeah, the wikem.org site is the closest I've seen to turning this into a curriculum. Life in the Fast Lane is pretty good, but it doesn't have the organization. Life in the Fast Lane, you've still got to sort of know what you're searching for to get to where you want to be.
And then the fourth thing was that learners have limited time and that they should use that time more wisely with traditional educational materials.
I think it all depends on individual learning styles.
Yeah, I don't think there's one style fit for each person, and this just is another tool available to people who may prefer to have a podcast or a blog or some other way to absorb and incorporate the information into their knowledge base.
You can't or you shouldn't read a chapter while you're on your 45-minute commute to work. you probably shouldn't be reading a chapter if you're out for a jog or out for a walk in the woods. But the podcasts are available and you can learn that way. If that's the time that you have allotted, then an efficient way to use that time.
So you could leverage your time. I always like to say you could turn your car into a classroom by listening to a podcast. And just like you, I would not recommend reading one of the fundamental textbooks in emergency medicine while commuting.
Right, but you have to do it at some point during your training. You got to read a textbook cover to cover. I think everybody agrees on that.
So then the fifth and final part was that foam could make people intellectually lazy and not dive deeper into the literature because they just consumed it on a podcast.
We do that all the time. We read summary articles. We read meta-analyses all the time. I don't think even Nick, when he reads a meta-analysis, goes back and looks at all of the original data that was used to put that meta-analysis together. We depend on reliable people to give us what we need to know out of the material that's out there. And I don't consider that intellectually lazy. I consider that efficient.
Well, that covers the five things, really six, that Nick had put together when we were discussing this. So what I wanted to do now, if it's okay with you, is that you took the pro position. You have those four comments, and you framed your pro position, or being in favor of foam being an essential tool for medical education. And again, you framed that in those four lines that you've been classically attributed to. So I was wondering if we could go through those four lines and go through the thoughts that you had and give you a chance to expand on those, with the first line being, of course, you can give it better than I can. What is it, Dr. Lex?
I said, if you want to know how we practiced medicine 5 years ago, read a textbook.
And so why is that important for foam then? What was your explanation in that?
That you cannot expand on knowledge you don't have. You need the basic building blocks. And that's what the textbooks provide.
So you need a good foam foundation.
Exactly. And then foam is the blocks. I've used the analogy before that these are sort of like Legos for the brain. They are little bits of information that you use to fill in the gaps in the brain and build on what's already there. And I think that's what foam excels at. Foam can't substitute for a textbook, not in curriculum. It may be able to soon. If the Wikium project continues at the current rate, maybe in 2 or 3 years, that will be the sufficient textbook that everybody around the world needs. Say, this is my emergency medicine curriculum. But it's not quite there yet.
Dr. Lex, you had about journals. And if you could give us the quote on the journal and expand on that point.
What I said is, if you want to know how we practiced medicine 2 years ago, read a journal article. That might be a little exaggerated. I think the journals are getting better about getting their information out quicker than that, especially with pre-publication online. Nonetheless, there is that lag time because it has to go through the peer review process. You speak about quotes. I read a wonderful quote just yesterday. It said the peer review process is the means that many scientists use to prevent other scientists from publishing. Certainly, there's no gold standard about peer review. That's been well proven time and time again. It's the best we've got, but it's far from perfect. In fact, Drummond Rennie, the former editor of JAMA, actually said if peer review were a drug, it would never get approved by the FDA because there's absolutely no proof it's better than placebo. And the former editor of BMJ used to, many a week, he was tempted to take all the articles that he got that week and stand at the top of the steps and throw them down the steps. And whatever reached the bottom would be the ones he would publish just to see if anybody ever noticed.
Well, I think we better move off journals then and move into conferences. What was the quote on conferences?
But if you want to know how we practice medicine now, go to a good medical conference. I said good on purpose because there are only a handful that I consider good of the ones that I've been to. In the last couple of years, I must admit that ISEM has become a super conference. It was in Dublin in 2012. It looks like the one in Hong Kong next month in June will probably be just as good. My organization, American Academy of Emergency Medicine, has what I consider, I'm prejudiced, of course, because I sit on the education committee and I was actually chair of the conference for 5 years, but I think we have some of the best emergency medicine education that you can get, and it's free for members. Talk about foam. Once you're a member of AAEM, you don't pay anything to go to this amazing scientific assembly. And then in the critical care world, the whole SMAC movement, again, out of Australia with Chris Dixon and Mike Cadogan, is absolutely magnificent. And in the foam tradition, they put those lectures out for free. They're just starting to release them in the last week. The next meeting will be in Chicago next year. It's in the United States, and it's going to be phenomenal. So those are the type of meetings that are going to teach you how we're practicing now and to some extent teach you how we're practicing in the future.
Well, I'm attending a phenomenal conference this next week. And of course, I'm biased because it's our national conference. It's the Canadian Association of Emergency Physicians. And that'll be taking place in Ottawa. And it is always an amazing conference. The last part you said in your comment was about learning in the hallways and something about taking the hashtag and leaving the classroom. Can you just expand on that final point?
Well, the take the hashtag, leave the classroom was just, I was trying to come up with just sort of a little catchphrase that people could use. Listening to other people talk about where they think the future of our specialty is going, I think is an excellent way to learn. Hearing what people are excited about that they've heard about, either at meetings where they've read new articles or through the world of, and I hate to use the term social media, but Twitter is just an absolutely phenomenal tool. I've been on Twitter for a couple of years. As you probably know, I'm sort of a semi-Luddite, in that I don't have a television set, and I didn't have a cell phone until one was forced on me a couple of months ago. But even before I had a cell phone, I had 2,800 followers on Twitter, strictly from my office computer. But Twitter is where the conversations of the future are taking place and the references are taking place. And I know you've seen this as well as I have, where an exciting idea can literally go around the world in the matter of a day or two.
So I wanted to ask you, did you have any final thoughts, any foamy information that we haven't covered that you wanted to get across in today's podcast?
When you introduced me, you said something about me being in the sort of in the first generation of educators, which I am strictly by matter of age. And there are a lot of second-generation educators out there who are very, very good, but they haven't really jumped on the whole foam movement yet. The ones that I'm excited about now are the people who are 5-10 years out of residency who have already figured out that this is the future of education. But when I talk to groups of residents now, I tell them how jealous I am of their future. When I was being educated 30 and 40 years ago, we didn't have people like that. We didn't have tools like that. I'm kind of jealous of what the future is going to be, because it's going to be pretty amazing. I mean, the things we're talking about are not going to happen overnight, but they're happening very, very rapidly. There are guys my age who are still the holdouts. I'm not one of them. It's not a generational thing. It's an ability to adapt to the newer ways of learning.
Well, you certainly have adapted well, and you've led from the top, and you're continuing to lead. And like I said at the beginning, and I know you are a bit embarrassed by my lengthy introduction, it's because you make a difference, and you're making a difference now, and I think you're going to continue to make a difference because of the legacy you're leaving with these free emergency medicine talks and embracing the foam movement.
If you can indulge me for a minute or two, I'd like to explain a little bit about that.
Sure, I'd love to.
First is the part of the Hippocratic Oath, which most people never get to. And that's where Hippocrates says that if, you know, to love and respect your teachers as you do your parents. Now, my addendum to that, and you might want to believe this, but my addendum to that is never forget your teachers are just as full of bullshit as your parents. You love your parents, and you respect them, but you know when they're BSing you. And it's kind of the same with your teachers. But when you get towards the end of the Hippocratic Oath, he talks about treating the children of your teachers as your equal, and if they wish to learn this art, you should teach it to them without fear covenant. In other words, Hippocrates was talking about free open access medical education. Right now, I'm sitting at my office on the 10th floor of Jones Hall in Philadelphia, across from Temple Hospital. I look at a corkboard above my desk, and there's a leaf that's held there with a pushpin. The leaf is from the plane tree of Hippocrates on the island of Kos. It's from the tree under which Hippocrates used to teach for free people who wanted to learn medicine while he was at the Temple of Asclepius on the Isle of Kos. And I treasure this ratty old leaf that just pinned up on my corkboard here. And I've always been a big fan of open access.
I think nobody would argue with the fact that you are paying it forward over and over again. At the end of each show, we have a Keener contest to recognize the keenest person from the previous podcast who got the question correct. And last week's Keener contest winner was Chris Belcher, and they got a three-part question correct. They knew that azithromycin was discovered in 1980, patented in 1981, and the third part of that question was that it was discovered in Croatia by Dr. Dokic.
Okay, there you go.
For this week's Keener contest, I was wondering, Dr. Lex, if we could use the quote at the end of your EP Monthly article. And if you could give us the quote, what we're looking for is the Nobel Prize-winning physicist who said the quote.
A new scientific truth does not triumph by convincing its opponents and making them see the light, but rather because its opponents eventually die and a new generation grows up that is familiar with it.
So if you know what Nobel Prize-winning physicist said this quote, send me an email, thesgem@gmail.com, and the keenest person to get the answer right, in other words, the first person, I will send you a cool skeptical prize. Again, it's been great having you on the podcast. Can you give us the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine tagline?
I will give you the tagline. I will also give you the disclaimer that I give whenever I give a talk. I say this is my imperfect interpretation of a very imperfect literature. That's my disclaimer. For that reason, remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.